This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician.
Jimmy hit Austin.
My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest.
Together we move fast, trying to grow up slow. Our hopes were high, our overhead was low. They all told me you weren't the only one I'd ever find. We had road ahead, miles behind.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast, coming to you from the cozy confines of Trinidad World Recording, my studio here in Fort Worth, Texas. Oh, man, what a week we have had. What a week we've had. Man, oh, so many great guests coming in here. Jordan Powell was here recently.
Yes.
Old Road Stories. Pat Green recently, my good friend. Wes Cunningham, we just had the stars. Just the stars, so much insight. Because this is a show where, as you're sifting through MySpace pages, Facebook, you know, scrolling through your iTunes, what do I even want to listen to? You just don't even know. You look somewhere, you're looking for someone to give you some guidance. That lighthouse in the fog, as we like to say, it is the P2 Podcast. Welcome, everyone. Well, today we have a very special guest, an old friend of mine. One of the first guys to ever make a CD in the Texas music business. Am I right or am I wrong?
You know, Phil, you were the first.
The voice you hear there is my friend Owen Temple. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. I remember that Phil World CD in the Back 40 jukebox.
You thought, who is this guy? He must be huge.
Oh, man.
He must be huge. I remember it was, I tell the story a lot, where I went to Waterloo Records with a shoebox of my CD, Phil World, 1996.
Yep.
They said, man, this is great. We've got, you know, of course they have a store full of CDs, but they had some Texas kind of CDs, but you had your run-of-the-mill, your Jerry Jeff Walkers,
sure.
Joe Ely. Yep. These guys were major label artists.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed, even
MCA, yeah.
Indeed, Robert Earl Keen was even on
Sugar Hill.
Sugar Hill, out of North Carolina. Mm-hmm. He had a label. That wasn't fair.
Mm-hmm.
So who was there? There was they had CDs from Jack O'Pierce, Jack Ingram,
okay,
and myself. And shortly after myself, Owen Temple shows up. I'm like, ooh, who's this guy?
Yeah.
Now there's four of us. Now there are four people independently creating CDs in Texas. And look at what we have birthed here. Are you and I claiming, I've written a lot of songs.
Have you written a lot of songs?
We've invented Texas music and the CD, you and I.
Well, you heard it here. And the internet, I also contributed a lot to.
You had a hand in that?
Yeah.
Well, what have you been up to lately? You and I, of course, you always written songs, always played music. You started down in Austin.
Yep.
Playing.
Yep. The Back 40 was the first place I played, which, no kidding, your CD was on the jukebox there. It was a...
Oh, Henry's Back 40. That was down off of 4th Street or 5th Street?
5th and Neches. Or 5th and Trinity. I can't remember.
There was always a couple of drunk guys playing pool in there. And
shuffleboard table. It was the old men ruled it from like noon to 5. And they played like dominoes and smoked and like ate barbecue next door.
And was it, what was that old lady's name?
Lois. And Mark, her son, they both
ran the place.
$40 and all the natural light I could drink.
That's right.
Was a good wage.
They did. They paid me $40. I mean, you had to play like 4 45-minute sets.
Yep.
And bring your own PA. And if you didn't mind doing that, you could play.
Exactly. I had 10 songs, so I had to repeat them a lot over those 4 hours.
I played there. I played there like twice a week for a while, like Tuesdays and Thursdays or something.
Yeah.
Corey played there. Corey Moore.
Corey Moore played there a lot.
Jack did a summer there. Jack Ingram did a couple of summer.
Did he really?
A couple of gigs there. I remember I talking to him about it. And
yeah. When he first got going.
Uh-huh. And my friend Graham Sones was playing on Wednesday nights. Mm-hmm. And just, man, that's just lines, people just out
there. Is that right? Yeah, see, yeah. I never had a lot of people coming in there.
Wednesday night was the perfect night because there was no, like, Thursday night date party or whatever, no college party or something. Wednesday was the night nobody knew what to do with.
That's right. The good nights to be there, man, in a rocking college town. So you started, you were going to the University of Texas.
Uh-huh, yeah.
You were a student body president. Is that right?
Vice president
of the student body of the University of Texas.
That's right.
So you had quite a foothold there.
When you said,
I'm, a lot of power. I'm putting out a record. There was 50,000 students who'd maybe say, yes, I know who that guy is.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe I'll listen to his music.
I don't know. There was a lot of power. A lot of power.
You ruled University of Texas with an iron fist.
You know, the military, the marching band, I ruled.
Yeah.
How'd
you get into that sort of politics at such a young age?
I played the burgers.
Yeah.
Parties, you know.
So yeah, I had
friends in a couple of different
houses,
places across town,
yeah.
and so it was like I had one more, you know, what, like 5% of the student body vote. So it's not
right,
like,
right. So you started just playing songs on a stool.
Yeah. I learned how to write songs probably the same way you did, just by copying down the words to songs I liked, and I was like, oh, hey, look, it rhymes there.
Yeah.
Oh, and then it rhymes again.
Right.
Wow.
That was there was something I always did. I'd take an old song and just change the lyrics, but use the same melody and the same. I think a lot of guys did that.
Chuck Berry did that.
The old Dylan did it. You know, the old folk tradition. You just take a Woody Guthrie song and change the words or something like that. But you started playing. So Austin, man, banging around back 40. Did you ever go play Pete's Piano Bar?
I played. That was
did you ever
my
do
second,
that gig?
Second.
I know
gig,
you played
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was helpful. They really paid like about $100.
$100. Yeah, that's
$100
right.
$100 there.
That was pretty good. Corey was the big Pete's guy.
Corey played down there at Pete's. He kind of blazed that trail. And then Hangum High Saloon. You remember Hangum High Saloon?
Yes, they had those.
It's now Buffalo Billiards on 6th Street. But it used to be this great music venue.
It was a great room. They had like Willie Nelson come in there.
Merle. I saw Merle Haggard there.
Is that right? Yeah. With Corey
opening. Corey
opened
for him.
I remember that.
Yeah.
I remember going, God, how did he get this gig?
No.
Wasn't that one of Shaberg's place?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he partnered in the talent
great,
booking.
The great Mark Shaberg. He was a booking agent. Popular talent. In Austin,
yeah,
and they booked. Guy, he'd always call me and just say, hey,
"College
I gotta,
bands, and
I gotta,
bands for
got
college
a party
parties
to get this Sigma Chi house. Yeah. You know, $600. Bring your own PA.
That was it.
Parents' weekend. It was something like that.
Mark's still doing good. He's down Corpus now at Concrete Street,
Brewster Street,
and
Concrete Street. Yeah,
uh-huh.
I've run into him out here recently over the years. Amazing. He's one of those holdouts, man. Still
no
in
kidding.
The business, Mark
no
Shaberg.
And he did it right out of college himself. We saw him like. He'd been doing it 10 years already.
Booking all those. What are those great cover bands he booked? Like pictures and all those. He had that book of all the bands and their set lists. Remember those popular talent guides?
I do.
All the bands were like a verb, but with the in front of it, like the kick or the grip or something.
And getting and him booking you was kind of the beginning of it.
Yeah, I had my own page in there.
Yeah.
You know, you did too.
Yeah.
Like a picture of with a guitar on the back. He plays any number of his own songs, plus a few by Willie Nelson or Robert Earl Keane or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And
I had a friend that wanted to book me for a party, and he called me. He's like, you know, can you play? I was like, yeah, I can, but let me tell you who to call.
Call my agent. Don't call me.
Well, no, I was like, he wasn't my agent.
Oh, he wasn't?
Mark wasn't my agent. I was like, I wanted him to start booking.
Right.
So I said, call popular talent and say that this is who you want.
Yeah.
And sure enough, got a call from
Shaberg. Hey, add you to the roster.
Yeah, yeah. Gentry Sparling. Remember Gentry?
Gentry, yes.
Yeah.
He was a throwback from the 80s, man.
He was.
I remember I went in there about 1995 and he came out in the pointy toed boots, the
black slacks,
Cavaricci pants, and the leather tie. Nice guy, man.
Yep. I appreciate it.
Gentry Sparling, a lot of work there.
Yeah.
Gosh, I hadn't thought of that name in a long time.
Yeah.
And then later on, you had Greg Henry.
Yeah.
Later on, from Pat Green's whole
Universal's deal. Universal's what is. And it was
right.
up in, when he was in Waco.
It was Universal. But then he was officing there with Schaeberg for a little while. Well, maybe a year or so. But I remember going to see Greg over there.
I gotcha.
He and Mark were doing some stuff.
Yeah. Greg's doing good. He's got a neat little family out there in Austin. We saw, I guess, about a year.
You keep up with Greg a little bit?
I do. Yeah. I try to.
Mm-hmm. Greg Henry. Man, built the Pat Green empire.
He did.
Really did. Pretty, very impressive. He's one of
their early partners, yeah, for sure.
Young, ambitious guy, and every time Pat was packing something around, you gotta talk to Greg, man. You gotta talk to Greg.
You know? Ambitious guy, and my first publicity picture, he was like, we need a publicity picture.
Mm-hmm.
It's the thoughtful,
gazing off in the distance.
I think it was a gazing off in the distance
in the desert.
I would like to see an inventory of the various. Pose, because there's really limited.
Yeah.
I mean, there's basically 15 basic styles.
That's right.
There's the gazing in the distance.
Train tracks.
Train tracks. Oh, everybody's got a train track. Michael O'Connor, another songwriter.
Yeah.
And Brenham plays guitar for Slade and a great songwriter.
Yeah.
He collects album covers with train tracks.
Nuh-uh.
And he's going to make a collage. Like a master collage.
I've got a few I could give him, I think.
I've got one that I could contribute to that. And I just can't wait for that collage, though, because it's really, it's the first thing that a young songwriter thinks.
Just going down some lonesome trail.
Just some track.
That's
Nobody
right.
Nobody ever thinks of the fact that if you're standing on a track when a train comes, it's kind of a bad deal.
It doesn't show you very smart. But, man, we did. We always went to the train tracks or gazing off. I think the gazing off in the distance kind of had its roots in kind of the Joshua Tree.
Oh, yeah.
U2.
Yeah.
You kind of got the staggered... nobody look at the camera. Nobody look at the camera. You're kind of gazing off in the distance.
Well, when you look at the camera, you've only got a couple of choices. It's tough.
Yeah.
Happy. What else? Seductive.
Yeah, it's hard. The picture. I quit doing it. Every picture I send somebody, he got a picture. I send it to him. It's something from 1999.
Yeah.
I look young, and I'm just just use that.
Sure. Yeah.
Or if you want to take some picture of me playing live. I've quit posing for pictures. I just have my kids.
I'd rather have a root canal than a camera in my face.
Than a photo session.
Just look relaxed.
Yeah, right. Of course, you want to look cool. You want to look good.
Yeah.
It's just a part. It's just a self-conscious thing that we don't need. We're already songwriters, for God's sakes. You're already putting yourself out there on so many different levels.
Give me a break with this.
We just don't need that.
Give me a break with this.
Man, so what started happening for you, man? You started you sold a lot of records early on.
Yeah, but you talk about Waterloo Tower and Tower.
Well, just in Austin, I just remember Crystal Clear, man. You were a sweetheart of Crystal Clear.
Those
first couple of records.
It was a Dallas distributor that actually had a really lockdown on the record stores in Texas. They'd convinced all the record stores to stock a local section.
Well, there was originally they had the mom and pops, privately owned, Waterloo Tower,
sure.
CD World, and then the quote unquote peak was when they said, "Man, now we've got Blockbuster has a Texas music section. They're carrying on
that's
music."
That's right. Then all the
Sam
Hastings.
Goodies, Hastings.
Yeah.
We started getting in all those stores in the late '90s.
Sure.
So that was kind of the peak. Started getting into some big chains.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's right. So I think what kind of happened is the cost of recording a CD for the first time was actually somewhat low.
Yeah.
And there was this distribution means.
Crystal Clear. John Frazier.
Yeah.
Do you remember him?
I do.
Work here? John Frazier always helped out over there. So you made, your first record was what?
General Store. Yeah.
Lloyd Maines producing?
Yep, he did.
Cedar Creek Studio?
Fred Remmert's Cedar Creek
Fred
Studio.
Fred Remmert. Indeed.
Yeah.
But you were one of the, who else had recorded there? I mean, the old guys. Was there somebody recent who had,
Corey Morrow was making his records.
Then. Right, right.
Or he'd made Man That I've Been, or was it... No, it was
one of those
before
first,
that.
It was
Texas Time Travel on the five-song EP,
right,
which is...
Right. Yes.
That song, Drinking Alone?
I think
is still one of my favorite
Morrow
songs.
Morrow was one of those guys that, of all the jokes made about some of these Texas guys all being... with their shotguns and their dogs and some songs about drinking. Morrow, early on, always turned my head a little bit. He had some pretty good songs.
I think he does have
clever.
Some good songs,
and even today, when I hear a new single on the radio, and I'll recognize it.
Exactly.
That's Corey. That's a good song.
I agree.
21 Days on the Road. I'm always like, man, that's...
He's a great writer.
That's not an embarrassing song by any stretch. It's damn good.
He's got soul. He's got real, you know, real feelings.
I mean, he really does.
When you hear a song that he wrote, you believe it. You believe that there's actually a person that actually has this
experience,
set of experiences and feelings.
That's right.
Whereas you don't buy that on everything that comes across. Like, happen. That didn't happen.
Not all these college kids are out there riding the rail with a bottle of Jack. Not yet.
Amtrak.
Not all of them hopping a train to some dirty town, you know, somewhere. I'm kind of like, I don't know if that guy's ever done that. Oh, well. But, yeah, man, so Corey was making records down there. Was that about Cedar Creek? I mean, it had been around a while, that studio. God, what a great studio. But
yeah,
you were one of the first guys. I think about how many kids have recorded there now. Good grief.
Yeah.
In this Texas music. But really, Corey and you, and I was trying to think who, I mean, I'm sure Joe Ely or somebody done something.
Yeah, yeah, they made a lot of records out there. Let's see. I mean, Jimmy LaFave was making records there.
But as far as young Texas guys making their own albums with their own money.
Okay.
Probably not a whole lot, right?
No.
Before you and Corey?
Nah, I think Corey was probably the first.
Maybe
Pat out there. I think Pat made George's Bar out there.
He did. He made his first ones out there. Of course, he had the connection with Morrow, I guess. Yeah, he knew Corey down there.
That's true.
So who else do you have playing on that first record?
Well, you know, that was...
You're still a solo guy, right? I mean, you just played...
Yeah. That was... Goodness, it was Michael Terabay on the bass... And it was
The
great Michael Terrible. And
Pat Green's bass player. And,
And Mark Patterson on the drums.
Played with everybody from Keane to Beaver Nelson.
Exactly.
Who else? Yeah.
He's played with Bruce a lot. And Bruce Robinson.
So when that record came out, you're moving some units, man.
Yeah, you know, I got lucky in the sense that that Tower Records on the Drag.
I just remember seeing it. They had
a local section.
They had the rankings, like the 1 through 20,
and that actually mattered. That actually helped.
Yeah, it did. I mean, you'd be up there in the top. I remember Phil Comes Alive, one of my early live. It'd get up there like number 15 on the. I'd be like, wow, and then you'd sell more the higher it got. It seemed like.
Yeah, and that's.
But I remember seeing you way up there. You know, I was like, man, this Owen Temple guy. Seems to be
moving
some product.
Well, they bought people bought it, and all of a sudden I'd paid for the printing and the recording.
Yeah.
So I made another one.
Right.
And did the same thing, and then I'm lucky to.
Before you knew it, you were in so deep you couldn't get out.
Yeah, that's true.
And here you are today.
And you know, I love it, and I've written a lot of songs, and there's still nothing better for me than finishing a song and going. Well, actually, I don't know about finishing it. Maybe finishing it is the fun part. Maybe the writing. Being so close to seeing it's going to work.
Yeah, right.
So that's definitely still what keeps me going.
Always a thrill, man.
Yeah, it is.
It never leaves you. Never leaves you, for better or worse.
Exactly.
We are talking today with Owen Temple, who is so kind to drop by the studio here. We will be back in our next segment here very shortly to discuss what Owen is doing now. You know, some more philosophy in what's going on out there from the perspective of somebody who's been doing it a while out there, where music has been, where it may be going in these confusing times. Owen Temple to shine that light through the fog from the shore. Help us, sir, in our next segment. Stay tuned.
Together we move fast, trying to grow up slow. Our hopes were high, our overhead was low. And they all told me you were...
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It's Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast. Did you know if you call 817-733-5256... you just talk to me, Phil, and let me know where we can come play. I'm having a party in the backyard by the pool. Or we've rented the Astrodome. We need a kick-ass band. We're there. You might say to yourself, gee whiz, you know, I'm not a professional singer. But it'd be nice to make a record. You know, I'm just an insurance salesman. Phil wouldn't want to mess with me. Garbage! You know how many records we've done in here, Temple?
How many?
Man, I don't know. Tens of... you know, 40, 50, 60.
There you go.
But a lot of them.
It's good space for it.
The vast majority. I remember the great, your old producer, the great Lloyd Maines, once said to me, when I said, man, you've produced a lot of great records, Lloyd. He shook his head and said, man, 95% of the records I've made are just some dude, some farmer, some doctor who wants to make an album. He said, that's most of what I do. Mm-hmm. So I think it's important, too. I think a lot of people get discouraged or think, you know, I'm not going to go into Phil's studio or bother him with myself, my five songs or something. I wish, because I feel like those are the guys I can help the most. You know, you get you coming in here, Temple. I can't teach you anything. I'm just going to put you a mic and say, hey, record. But some guy who can't sing, who struggles with his writing, or so he thinks, or says, you know, I could never make a song out of these lyrics. Those are the guys I can say, ah, but you can. That's what we do.
And that's what we did on our first records. You know,
yeah, you didn't have it all figured out, did you?
We still don't have it all figured out, but...
There it sits.
You know, but we invented the internet too, so we, you know.
I know that pays the rent, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Inventing the internet. Well, Owen Temple is out there. Boy, I've always been intrigued with your songwriting, your recent stuff, your friendship and writing and travels with the great Adam Carroll.
Yes, sir.
Man, I've never knew much about Adam Carroll other than his music was awesome. And then I got to play the Archer City deal out there.
Yeah.
Lazy Boys Supper Club. I went out there one night and played. They put me on a bill with Adam Carroll and the great Beaver Nelson.
Yes,
who made one of the great records ever, "The Last Hurrah."
Oh man, Beaver's great,
dude. I don't know how I stumbled onto that album. Somebody gave it to me. I think Vicky Lucero gave it to me or something. Every song I played with the band, they're like, "Dude, I can't believe how great these songs are." I go, "Man, and you know what? I haven't heard much of his other stuff, and he's a funny." Introspective, somewhat surly guy, Beaver Nelson. But we had an enjoyable night out there. We walked around the town square, me and Adam and Beaver, with styrofoam cups, with Coors Light over ice.
Nice.
Beaver said, I have so much hot beer in the van, I've grown accustomed to drinking it on the rocks. So now I just drink beer on the rocks. I was just like, what? So that's what we did. We walked around Archer City, Texas, where the theater where the Last Picture Show was filmed. How'd you get to know old Carroll?
About the same time you and I got to know each other. Lloyd made a record for Adam.
Yeah, in 97, that's right.
Or something.
His first album.
And
Cedar Creek as well. Yeah, where Lloyd worked, right?
Mm-hmm. And, you know, just I think maybe Lloyd mentioned the record to me or, you know.
I'm doing this guy, Adam Carroll's album, and you kind of listen to it.
Exactly.
And, yeah.
And so, you know, we played a gig. I think it was at the Larry Joe Taylor Festival together. And,
right.
And I just, you know, got to be
friends.
Pals. And,
he's about your age, right? In the,
yeah.
I don't know, mid-30s,
yeah.
Adam,
yeah.
Maybe?
So
yeah.
And, another, you're right, Beaver's a great writer, and Adam's a great writer. Yeah.
Yeah. So I want to talk a little bit about what you're doing now. Of course, you've always made your recent records. I saw your Dollars and Dimes.
Yep.
Triple A.
What
was it? Number one on something? I got some email. Number one on the.
On the Euro Americana chart.
Euro Americana chart. Now, that's just a niche that you dominate in there, it seems like.
Exactly. You know, it took.
How did that happen? That's cool.
It took the Allies so long to conquer Europe. And,
I know. And
Owen
Temple.
Just in July.
One day.
July.
And all of Europe has fallen to the spell of Owen Temple's music.
Then, you know, the trouble is August.
Yeah.
Someone new comes along.
Someone new comes along and knocks you off.
But July was a good month. Actually, I ended up going and playing in July.
Did you go over and play in Italy and France?
Yeah.
How did that work out? Who booked you over there?
There's a guy named George Carrier.
Give me his number. Give me his number.
I will.
Have you been to Europe a couple times?
No, that was my first time. First time. And what they have is just fans of roots music.
Yeah.
There, you know. Uh-huh. And there's a kind of a group of them that kind of vote on a chart. You know,
yeah, right. So, now do you go around to your guitar just playing a little cafe, pub type deals?
I did in Italy. In France, it was a band gig. They have a festival that's a lot like kind of Larry Joe's deal.
But really? Just people vomiting in a field, sleeping in tents?
But they're vomiting French wine.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Oh, yep. They're vomiting French wine.
Nice cheeses.
Yeah, just like, my God. So you go into the
They vomit in French. It's actually
they vomit in French.
Different. It's more
very
like kind
fine
of a
wine.
You know.
It just has a sophisticated splatter to the whole thing.
Yeah, exactly.
So you played with the band over there. You took your guys or they have a back line for you?
I took my guys and we play this festival. It's called the Country Rendezvous Festival.
Country
the Flatlanders
Rendezvous.
Were on it too. Which was,
oh, really?
Yeah. And
did you get to see any of those guys? Talk to them at all? Or?
Yeah, yeah, I did. They're
and Billy Joe, Joe Ely.
Those are my. That's like the holy trinity of like Texas songwriting.
Oh,
by the
man,
way,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was great. It was and those guys sounded great. I could play right before them. And who else was over there?
So Jimmy Dale Gilmore, were they all over there? Jimmy Dale
yeah.
Gilmore, Joe Ely, Butch Hancock. Who am I missing? Terry Allen. See the other guy?
No, he's not in that. I wish he was. But
no, is it those? It's the three of those guys.
Yeah,
that's right.
Without Terry. Terry,
no Terry.
Doesn't play enough shows, but he's busy with making other art, like
that's
visual
right.
art.
Yeah, that's right. He does
sculptor.
A lot of stuff, man. All those West Texas artists, man. West Texas
I
artists.
Know, I know.
A crew of them out there. So I didn't know you spent all this time in Europe, man, over there. How
What's
is it?
That?
Is it hard moving around over there?
You know, packing like an American, it was, you know,
really?
Like you carry these like three bags and you're like, well, they're on rollers, you know.
Yeah. Toothpaste, deodorant.
Exactly. Yeah.
Not widely
accepted.
You got
accepted. A guitar too. And people see you get on the train with a guitar and they're like, oh
come
don't
on.
Put that. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He's
yeah.
got to put it over there, you know. And you kind of, everybody's afraid you're going to knock them in the head with it and you
right.
don't, but
yeah.
they're still worried you are. So
how was the shows received? Did they sit there and,
it was interesting.
Pretty
you know,
polite or?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. they don't speak. I mean, they speak a lot of English,
mm-hmm,
but they don't.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, in a song, it's coming fast. It's
right.
new, you know. So it is kind of interesting to kind of. I mean, usually they're more into like the vibe rather
well,
than the
storytelling.
Yeah, and
the road
will,
goes on forever. Just kind of wouldn't land with yeah. with a non-English speaking audience.
Exactly, and they might know like the four.
Yeah.
Key
the road goes on forever. Party never ends.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you repeat those words enough time in the song by the end, they'll
right.
They'll know.
Yeah.
But
well, that's very interesting, man. So what? You came back from Europe. So your record got out there a little bit. Did you get a distributor or somebody? Did you send it to somebody? How'd that happen?
Got this just a little label in Austin that
who is that?
It's called Owen Temple. Excuse me. El Paisano Records.
El Paisano.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But did you? How did you get the attention of the Euro? Did you have some?
No, we
publicity
didn't pay,
over
we
there.
You know,
did you send it over?
I don't
there?
Really buy, believe in that. I don't really
no,
believe in
yeah.
buying anybody's attention. And we just mailed it.
Yeah,
you know, just
yeah.
mailed it and people liked it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I was lucky that they had the time to listen to it and liked it
and the know? Interest.
Yeah, yeah. But you know. Their stack wasn't that high, you know. Their
sure.
the stack on their desk, but
they hadn't gotten that new Beaver Nelson album yet.
Exactly. Yeah.
That showed up in August.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
But July was your month, man.
It was. Yeah, yeah. It was a good month, and now I'm recording here, about halfway done with another record that hopefully next summer will be ready.
So what's different now for you? You came out. You make.
Still
your,
making songs.
You
right?
make your.
We're still
you,
making
look,
songs.
You go to it. You get Lloyd Maids.
Uh huh.
You know. You bring him in there. 2-inch tape. We're cutting it analog, man, through the Neve console down there at Cedar Creek.
Yeah.
Playing the back 40.
Throwing the tape on there.
We're gonna move some units.
Mm-hmm.
Hell, man. Once you sell 5,000 albums, the rest is gravy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, imagine what I'm gonna be making once I have like 10 albums. I mean, these checks aren't gonna be $500 a month. They're gonna be $15,000 a month. And off you go on your way.
Right.
What happens?
I guess this is...
You know, I just want to hear your version of my own experience. What do you see that happened? What's going on out there? Give me some perspective. For me.
See.
For my own sake.
All right. Let's
I'm
going to
lay
let's,
down and listen to your answer.
Let's break it down. Let's break it down here. I don't know.
You know.
All I know is that the recording costs have come down.
Yes, it has.
Right?
Yes, it has indeed.
So let's see what else. There's this thing called the interweb.
The interweb, yes, I've seen, I've heard of this.
And you can actually download a whole song, like, quick.
Right, and for free.
For free.
That's right.
Yeah, a lot of places free. And sometimes you don't even have to download it. You can
right.
just listen to the whole thing.
So what sort of philosophy do you have moving forward? We were talking about when you came in today.
Yeah.
You know, because you can't... You can't get into
it's
it with the idea.
It's not CD sales.
You're not selling CDs. You're
yeah.
not selling... So what is the driving force? What keeps you going? You're still writing songs. You're still banging around.
Right.
You know, making it work.
Yeah.
What
I would
keeps
say
you
writing
going?
Songs. Writing songs keeps me going. And then you have this song. And a song is not a product.
Right.
It was for a while. For about 50 years, it was a product. It was this thing.
Yes.
And now, you know, a song is not a
what is
product.
It? What is a song? Yeah, are we going to tackle
an idea? It's an idea. I would say it's an idea.
It's an idea.
Okay,
and,
so it's an idea.
An idea put in some sort of digestible fashion by an artist.
Sure, sure. Yeah. If it's got to be organized or it's right. not, you know, blah, 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 you know. But it's an idea that you can share. Mm-hmm. There's the ways you can share it. You can mm-hmm. sing it live. We can use these microphones, record it.
Right.
And send the file of this idea.
You can write it on a piece of paper.
You can stream it so that you don't ever have the file. You just access it from server.
Right.
Or you can, Stephen Foster, America's first songwriter.
Yes.
1850, sheet music. That was how the idea then. Then it was the phonograph was going to mm-hmm. change everything and ruin the sheet sales.
That's right.
And it did. You know?
Yeah,
and
that's right.
And then the jukeboxes. Wait, you can't have jukeboxes in cafes. People will not buy the records. Oh, but you'll sell you can sell the records to the jukebox.
That's right.
Then
that's
radio. Right. Wait, you can't do the radio because that's going to kill the, you know, but so what it is, the
we're
idea.
Always, we're always killing the format.
Yes.
But the idea of the song lives on.
And right now it's easier than ever to share the idea of a song.
That's right.
Now it's also easier than ever to make that idea
palatable.
Transmit it.
Right.
Whether at someone at the end of it enjoys it or it means something to them.
It's like that in any medium.
Exactly.
It's now easier than ever to get out my own thoughts on U.S. trade.
Uh-huh.
I have my blog. I've got a website.
Sure.
I sit up at 3 a.m. drinking coffee and I type a missive about whatever
mm-hmm.
global economics. And everyone is now a publisher. Everyone is a broadcaster. Everybody is. Who wants to be in there? You know the trick is, and I know. You know, say, well, how do you get noticed? Well, what's the end game? That's what we all ask ourselves.
Yeah.
How do you make it maybe put a kid through college?
There you
know,
you go.
For lack of a better
sure.
Example, you spend all this time chasing around, doing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, if we all knew the answer to that, we might not be sitting here completely.
But
it's more of a journey now than ever.
Well, yeah, I would say that.
In our lifetime. In
almost every business has changed by the internet, and the ways of getting paid has changed now. But I would say the scarcity now is not. It used to be the barrier to like making a record. You know,
cause if you had a vinyl record, it was just you were somebody. I mean,
it just
cost
a lot to make.
Sure.
Now I would say the limited quantity is trust.
Yeah.
Because you know, right now there's way more out there than
anyone can listen.
Than we can trust that we're going to like and
right.
And attention. That's
right.
The other limited quantity, and it's like. You know, if you have someone's trust and you have someone's attention, that's almost better than money in a certain way.
That's right. You know, I talk about our friend Bob Lefsetz a lot, who emails a lot, and it's always all about satiating the core, you know, and building that core of believers. In fact, another guy I talk about on the show a lot, Seth Godin, who's a marketing guy, sends emails out with great little ideas. He referenced a friend of his who once said that. Recently said that all you need is 1,000 people, really,
right.
on your email list, true believers,
right.
who are all going to come to see you a few times. This is whether you're an author or a blog guy or something. If you can go to an advertiser, someone say, man, I got 1,000 people.
Mm-hmm. Or a florist, even.
Or a florist or a dressmaker or someone who's going to come see your film that you made. And it's going to pay $10-$20 and buy the DVD and come see it. Man, they're each going to give you $100 a year, maybe. You know, then then that's $100,000. Mm-hmm. Take out my expenses, you know, mm-hmm. and you ease. And that's kind of where it seems like anybody who comes on this show
mm-hmm.
or myself, or there's some truth to that out there that there's more of those guys than ever. Mm-hmm. It seems like anybody who can slog it out and stay out there and earn some trust and kind of has that going on. You're kind of, man, but you go see him, man, there's still 40, 50 people there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they're all paying $10, and you know it's a Thursday night, and you kind of
you got to earn believers now. I would say it used to be you could buy believers.
That's
you
right.
Just if you bought enough advertisement, or if you had a big enough label and enough videos, but now people are so jaded that they're when I say jaded, I mean there's so many messages bombarding us every day that unless we trust that who's behind that,
that's right,
and who's that? Your friends, and your family.
That's right.
And maybe some like
people with common interests,
people with ideas that you believe in, like Seth Godin. I read his stuff.
Yeah,
the reason I trust those guys is because They're not trying to say, they're not saying buy, no, you know.
They're not asking you for money. Yeah. They're just sharing their ideas with you.
When I buy something, it's because my friend said,
yeah,
you should buy, or you yeah, should, you'd like
take
this.
A look at this, right.
I don't
right.
usually buy something because they said, now the chia is now available in a giraffe, you know.
Yeah, right.
You know, unless my friend goes,
this you gotta give me that giraffe.
This chia giraffe is great.
That's right.
I mean, the neck is so long. You
know. This is kind of an off subject a little bit, but it does occur to me. As I drive to Dallas uh-huh. and I see the miles and miles of unleased office space, uh-huh. What used to be Bed Bath & Beyond
uh-huh.
or Circuit City
right.
or, God, I mean, just, maybe there's still a Conn's.
Or General Motors.
It just occurs
car
to me.
Dealership.
Or even buildings downtown in some cities. You just think, man, what is the future of, like, that type of commercial real estate.
Sure, yeah.
And it seems like we haven't, under the recession, we haven't hit, there's got to be just a commercial real estate, crash.
Doesn't there?
No one leases these, but that kind of goes to your point of every person being their own, but those places, their whole thing is, this is our office building, check mm-hmm. it out, we yeah. got 8 floors of secretaries and, but, I'm in business here in the nice studio here,
yeah,
and
yeah.
I just got a BlackBerry, you know, and a Mac laptop, and I just walk around. I take a business call.
I think that's becoming
out
everybody.
In front of the kids' school, and I'm just kind of like, man, you know, we're the
everybody's a free agent now. That's the thing.
Everybody's
a free agent. Everybody's got a, you know, what their next gig is. They don't know whether it's a.
What business is out there going, we need 5,000 square feet of space?
Oh yeah.
Like Best Buy or something. Now you're always gonna have a Walmart, maybe a Target. That's food, clothing, uh-huh. and shelter.
Sure.
That's fine. But I'm talking like electronics.
I know.
Wallpaper. I'm
especially
just like.
Especially as your TV becomes your computer, becomes your. I mean, now my mom, used to be like four different devices.
Yeah, my mom used to walk into these places uh-huh. and try to find a salesperson. Uh-huh. And now I'm looking for a stereo. I mean, yeah. But you and I, we've already researched it. Uh-huh. We've already seen it. We just want to get the best price for it mm-hmm. and get it shipped to our door.
There you go.
Or go pick it up somewhere.
Yeah.
But we're not going to go shop.
Amazon.com. You can buy everything at Amazon.
I mean, you're going to walk into Best Buy and have some high school kid
uh-huh.
tell you about the newest HP printer. Or I don't know.
Who wants to print a picture anymore?
No, I don't
right?
know.
Right?
Yeah. It used to be
you wanted like pictures like to print them out.
Now, something like the Apple Store is a little different where you have not a whole lot of products. It's highly uh-huh. specialized
yeah.
and has a well-informed staff. They know everything about the iMac if you have any questions. I don't know. That's sort of Apple. Apple will not sell to mass. I guess they're in some mass stores, but they're not in Walmart, I don't think. Or
right.
You know what I mean? They have their own
relationship.
They have a cottage industry.
Yeah.
They have a product. They have their own stores, and that's it.
And people trust Apple now.
That's right.
I've seen waves of messages. And I think other people have too. Like that. For some reason, Microsoft has lost people's trust. And we were talking about
trust. It just doesn't work as well,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's viruses, and you get endless pop-up. You got to buy McAfee for a year, sign up now, and you're just like, what is all this crap? You know, just like, whereas the Mac, you pay a lot of money. Well, they're expensive.
I know.
But you turn it on and it's
you're,
on,
you're
and that's
in
it.
Business, yeah.
And if it gets broken, you go to the store and they fix it for free. That's it. End of story. So
I would say, to summarize, I'd say we're all in the trust business now. Whereas mm-hmm. before, you used to be able to kind of fool people.
Hoodwink people.
But
yeah.
now you got to have the goods. And whether it's an operating system, whether it's a song,
right.
you got to have the goods.
That's right.
You can't pull the wool over people's eyes because they can find out.
That's right.
Their friends, and their friends say, hey, man, no, skip it.
It's no good.
So it makes the world. So is the world competitive in every industry? Yeah.
And
you got to be good. You got to care.
Yeah.
You got to care. And so, now as far as music making for money,
yeah,
I would say we're in between models right now. As far as, I think that the next model is really exciting because
every person in the world pays $10 a month to have access to every song ever recorded,
and they
can
play it as much as they want.
Right.
I don't care.
We see that Owen Temple songs were played worldwide last month 13,812 times. You're like, okay, just. So, you know, divide that out, you get a check for $1,000 that month.
Yeah,
or so, whatever.
Maybe,
I
don't know what the amounts can be,
right.
but I think that is the next model as far as like, I can already see people who are like, well, I want to own the MP3. I want to have it on my drive.
Right.
That's changing. Because yeah, Pandora, people, as long as they can hear it when they want to,
right.
I don't think they really care whether it's on their drive or stored on some server in Northern California, as long as they can hit play, and it plays when they're with their friends.
It's funny how you talk about the song as an idea, and that's what makes it big. Because we talked about it on the show a few times, a band like U2 or the Beatles or some of these just Led Zeppelin. What makes those bands so great, or Robert Earl Keane, as good as The Road Goes On Forever is or something, the idea of those acts are bigger than any of their songs.
That's true. It's a relationship, really.
It is. And when a band's song is bigger than the band, or at least what the idea of the band is and what it represents, the band ultimately goes away a little bit.
Yeah, that's true.
There's been some great songs, and what was the name of that band? I can't remember. It's just some band
from Australia. You're right. That's a good point.
But, you know, just the idea is really what hangs out there of what that song means or represents, and it doesn't matter what form it is, or the idea of U2. You're like, oh, man, they had that one good song. And just, no, they're just, all their songs are good. And the whole idea of the band is of whatever they're selling, world unity and domination or love for all of mankind or whatever they're trying to do, or the Beatles or whatever, that their big ideas behind what those bands represent. And even on our in Texas, you know, Jerry Jeff Walker, the idea of him is just the gypsy song man, blah, blah, blah. It's bigger than any of his songs.
It's every show. It's every album.
It doesn't matter whether he's covering.
It's every party you went to, they're playing it.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if he's covering all Guy Clark or Townes Van Zandt songs. It's just, man, Jerry Jeff, man. He's bigger than any of the songs he plays. True. The idea of the act. That's what we all aspire to be, I guess.
Right.
It's just the idea of what Owen Temple is.
But for an artist, I would say it's hard to try and say, well, now I'm just going to be Jerry Jeff Walker.
Because that's right.
Because the only really thing we have our hand on is the song.
That's right.
Right now.
That's
right. You know what I mean? Right. So now those songs might create like shows and album covers and parties where it's played at, where all that bigger thing can happen.
Right, right.
Like Band Aid, you know, Bono singing in a.
Yeah.
Do you remember the Feed the Children? It's a Christmas.
Feed the world.
Yeah, exactly.
But let them know. That was the first.
That was
We
Bono.
Are the World.
That was Bono with
that was the European version of We Are the World.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But you know what Bono's line in there? But no one will ever remember this.
What's it?
Tonight. Let's thank God. He's talking about like homeless people. You know?
Yeah,
he's
yeah.
Like, tonight, let's thank God it's them and not us. You know,
is that what he said? Yeah.
Of course, it's you know.
Yeah, you're kind of like,
he's just singing it real passionately.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you don't think about it, you're like, oh, yeah. But then you go, wait. Tonight, let's thank God it's them and not you.
What's he say?
That's not very holiday spirit there.
That's right.
But
the idea of
that,
what he was saying.
But Bono's idea has.
He gets away with it.
Has endured beyond, past that little flub. Thank goodness.
Thank goodness. Well, speaking of inspiring the world, I want to take a look at a very cryptic and mysterious project in the P2 vault that has come to my attention. If you've been to some recent Phil Pritchett and the Full Band shows, you've heard us covering a song called Dirty South with lyrics like, I drink white lightning when I stood in the crib. I had a moon pie smeared all over my bib. Punched my first grade teacher right square in the mouth. That's how we do it in the Dirty South. That is a song by the great Gary Floater, an underappreciated, mysterious, unknown guy.
The number one country artist in Miami, Missouri.
Is that right?
Even though there's only two. But,
is that right? But the number one guy. And these songs were brought to my attention by Owen Temple and Adam Carroll. Jason Eady, is that right? So in the vault, I want to explore the record here. A Hero Never Learns, the songs of Gary Floater.
Yes.
In the vault, coming right back.
This is Owen Temple, and you're listening to my friend Phil Pritchett. This is the P2 Podcast.
White lightning when I was still in a crib. I had a moon pie smeared all over my bib. I was my first grade teacher right straight in the mouth. 'Cause that's how we do it in the Dirty South.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast. Email me, phil@philpritchard.com. Let me know what you think of the podcast. Email us your questions. We always dig into the mailbag every two or three episodes. Our good friend Owen Temple is here.
Good to be with you.
A songwriter's songwriter, a guy who's been inventing all kinds of things, including Texas music and the CD. And
exactly.
here he sits on the Pritchard couch here at Trinidad World Recording Studios. Well, a few months ago, about a year ago, I heard Owen's new stuff. I always keep up with what he's got going on, playing in town, listening to stuff online. Dollars and Dimes, selling all over Europe, Temple touring Europe, etc. And then I get this cryptic email from my friend Kevin Haggard, who's met you many times.
Yep.
in Houston. And he says, what is this? And he's very confused. And I go online, and there's a website, some YouTube things on there, and very cryptic animation on YouTube, very funny. And then the songs of Gary Floater. And I start listening to these songs with
right.
titles like Dirty South.
From the tribute record.
That's When the Eagle Screams. I find out it is a tribute album. But I recognize the voice. The
yeah.
voice is singing on there. A Hero Never Learns, the songs of Gary Floater. So, Gary Floater, I've been online, and I came across the documentary-style YouTube things. And, man, me and the band and I have just fallen in love with Gary Floater, who, you tell me. Who is Gary Floater?
I found out about him through like Adam and Jason, and he's this
Jason
guy.
Jason Eady, a
Jason
songwriter
Eady, yep.
here in Fort Worth.
We were driving across the Dirty South,
mm-hmm.
which is where we live, and also our friends and neighbors in
sure.
Alabama and Georgia. And
y'all do some playing
Missouri.
Out there from time
we're
to time?
We some shows out there, and we got, you know, as we were driving along there, you know, just these songs are, you know, you hear about it from this guy and
they're
this other guy.
They're floating in
they're
the
floaters,
air.
They're floaters.
That's right.
And this song, Dirty South, caught Warrior, and we found this tribute album, and he's a, you know, there's a lot of influences that I've got, you know, Terry Allen, one of my big
sure.
influences, Leon Russell, you know.
Yeah.
Guy Clark, you know, way down on that list is this guy, Gary Floater.
Who's Gary Floater.
His lyrics are pretty, you know, cliched.
What's the backstory on Floater? Yeah, do we know anything about him personally?
After 35 years in the music business, the first 20, he was a licensed mortician.
Was he really? And never really had a lot of mainstream success.
In fact, he sent these songs to some of the biggest stars in country music.
And
they told him not only no, but hell no.
Oh,
and
right?
don't ever contact us again.
Oh,
but he
gosh.
Kept doing it, and so he's a model of
How
persistence.
How could they turn down some of these
he's
songs?
He's a model of persistence. And I'm proud to be helping him out in some small ways, help spread the word about his tribute album. Some guys in Missouri, some of his buddies, Puffy Dan.
Yeah.
Walter sings a couple of songs, and
That's
Brandon
what I
Wayne
heard.
Aiken sings about half the songs. But
I see.
He's a total asshole. Lyrics, cliche.
He's a legendary asshole.
Legendary. Melodies.
Is it true he rides around on a little scooter and all that, or is that just kind of some artistic license?
You know, some people think he's disabled, and he's not. He actually just can drink more if he's on one of those, like, rascal things.
Yeah.
You don't have to walk.
Like you see him, right.
You don't have to walk as steadily. You can just drive, and you're not on a motor vehicle.
Now, I started listening to this album. I mean, who could deny it? Just the title. You know, so many guys sure. come in here to the studio, so many kids. I said, what's this song called? They say, this song's called You and Me. I'm like, okay. Next song is called Down the Road. I'm like, okay. Next song is called Tomorrow.
You and Me Down the Road.
You and Me Down the Road. I'm just kind of like, man, give me a title called Dirty South. Give me a title called A Hero Never Learns. Stand Back, Boys, I'm Fixin' to Care. That's When the Eagle Screams.
Yes, sir.
A Whole Lot Further to Fall, which is one of my favorites on the record. It's High Time This Old Cowboy Quit Getting So Goddanged High.
That's right.
Now, that's a title that I'm going to be intrigued by. Let Me Kiss You Where It Hurts. Your imagination runs
Touché.
Wild on
Touché.
Something like that.
Oh, man.
You know, Dust Off the Dulcimer one more time. So I came across these titles. I started listening to it. And, man, I just laughed hysterically. I cried.
Well, here's the thing.
But, I mean, is that? I hope that's the reaction
intended.
At first,
we weren't sure he was real.
Right.
We just thought there was just a couple
Gary
of songs.
Floater.
I thought it was a myth. But it turns out he's real. And there's a Gary Floater. There's a songwriting engine out there that is Gary Floater.
Yeah,
and
that's right.
He's still cranking them out, and sometimes it requires, a lightning strike and, fusing this matter together. And maybe three individuals have to be in the same
automobile. It's amazing after all those years and all that years of hard luck and treating people so poorly that he still has the wherewithal to still churn out music and still pursue his craft.
He's lost the trust of just about everybody, including his family, but God, he's moved beyond his family now.
Well, if that stopped every songwriter, we didn't have any strong songwriters.
Exactly.
But yeah, he's inspiring in that way.
Well, that's the thing, is total assholes in the music business. I mean, there's a long list.
That's right, a long list. Now, I also heard a rumor. I played this for a lot of guys in the band. We start playing Dirty South instantly.
Yeah.
My baby takes her top off when we go to the lake. Down, down, down. Yeah, she's soft and sexy, but she's mean as a snake. Now, does Gary require royalties? Because that could very well make it onto a Pritchett live record at some point. Those are always the best live songs. It's something you don't record in a studio. You do it live. You do it in a ramshackle sort of way. We put it out. Do I need to send Gary the requisite 8 cents a song?
You could search.
Or is he kind of, how does that work?
You could search on like BMI or something for maybe the song.
He's not going to be on Harry Fox, is he, or anything
you
like
know,
that?
I don't know. He might be on Red Fox.
Yeah. Another agency.
The Red Fox agency.
That's right. Send in your royalties, Phil. I mean, is he going to send me some papers to? I want to be up to speed with him because I know he can be kind of a scary guy if he hunted you down.
I'm sure he's got some handlers that have probably swindled him from his taking his rights and claimed it for themselves. But
I hear. Now, what about some of the people who came up to me as I was playing this for the band, for some fans? I said, man, listen to this Gary Floater tribute album. They're doing his songs, and this is Owen and Adams have brought this to the fore in some mysterious way. And some of them just say, Phil, that's just Owen and Adam and Edie drinking and pulling your chain and making some album, you know. And I kind of listened to it. I was like, well, I don't know. I didn't know where the...
Yeah.
What about that rumor?
I cover his songs. That's what.
Yeah.
That's
you play live songs?
Very simple. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I've played those songs in public. And
live
I'm,
shows. Yeah.
And it took me a while to learn them,
right?
And
he's got more, I hear. He's got a whole cache of stuff that's never been recorded.
There's a gospel album actually
that
I've heard about. It's called A Wretch Like Me.
Yeah,
and
sort of like like Elvis went through his gospel period,
sure.
Or Bob Dylan. That way,
exactly.
I mean, all the greats go through sort of a gospel era.
Exactly. A Wretch Like Me is probably coming down the pike here real soon, and being recorded somewhere in Missouri, I bet. You know, I'm a big fan of the songs. I like the songs. I also like Adam Carroll's songs. I like Jason Eady's songs. Mm-hmm. So it's a natural that I like Gary Floater's songs.
Well, are we going to see anything else from him? Is there some sort of other facet, maybe the gospel record, maybe, perhaps?
There's the gospel record. I've heard that there's a couple of other song titles. I'll go ahead and tell them to you.
This is what sells the whole listening experience.
Yeah.
What are the titles? Are there a couple being worked around?
Yeah, there's one called Hello Diabetes.
Oh, no. And, oh, man. But that's got to hit close to home.
Well, he's not a man that understands, a whole lot about, science or, physiology.
Yeah.
But he does.
He doesn't let it stop.
He's got his own way of approaching, diabetes.
It's his artistic
his diagnosis.
Diabetes. Okay. Now, that's a song or an album?
That's a song.
A song, okay, a song. Out there.
Here's some of the lines. Hello, diabetes, I knew you'd come to town.
Okay.
I've been waiting for you, wondering when you'd come around.
Right.
My blood sugar's rising up like the great speckled bird.
Uh-huh.
Such a terrible disease, such a funny word,
Yeah, that's right. Okay.
But, I left the light, hello, diabetes, I knew that you'd be here. Mm-hmm. I left the light on for you all through the ding-dong years.
That's right.
We all had the ding-dong years.
That's right.
And
He always puts so much of himself in his own music.
Oh, he does.
There's something universal that any listener can relate to.
Well, that's true. Everybody enjoys ding-dongs.
Mm.
Yeah, some of the other song titles are
What else
Pull
we got?
Over, I Want to Eat That.
Pull Over, I Want to Eat That. Okay. Wow.
Let's see. When Jesus Fought the Dinosaurs.
Oh, really? Is that one also? Now, yeah. does that fall under the gospel category?
Well, his dad, apparently Gary Floater Sr., told him would get, you know, have a couple of cold beers and
yeah.
let little Gary come over and he'd like start telling him stories from the old Bible.
Oh, I see. Yeah,
and
yeah.
He would kind of, I mean,
yeah.
tell the truth. I think he was making it up.
Sort of tie together different parts of history maybe to make
sure,
it.
Sure. You know,
but it stuck with Gary evidently for.
I think Gary Sr. was just fucking with Gary Jr.
Yeah, yeah,
but,
yeah.
But Gary believed him. Gary Jr. believed it, and so.
He's
got this song, so don't. But please don't tell him it's not true. No.
When Jesus fought the dinosaur.
Yeah.
So pull over. I want to eat that. Is that sort of about his experience on the road? You think?
I think it has to do with. It's got his origins in these eateries that usually depict the target animal on the sign. You know, kind of a realistic cow,
like a cow over a steakhouse door.
Exactly. Even the menu where they got like a little, you go to the Chinese restaurant and they got the illustration of the chicken.
Or a picture of a duck.
Right
something.
Above.
Yeah, right.
You know, this.
Yeah.
And I guess he's just a
visual
good old
guy.
Southern, just a good old Southern, like, you know, kind of equates loved, being loved to eating. And when you're not feeling loved, you sometimes eat. And I think sometimes people have been guilty of not loving him.
That's right. Well, that's what drives so many artists.
That's true.
They're seeking the love. They're seeking
that's
the love
true.
Out there. You could say the same perhaps about John Lennon or Michael Jackson. People who, want some sort of universal acceptance that maybe they didn't feel like at a young age.
I think he did send "Pull Over, I Want to Eat That" to Sugarland, and they said no.
They said they were passed on it.
They were not going to record it.
It seemed like it could really appeal to a modern audience, which I guess is the point behind these tribute records, sort of get his stuff out there. Where can P2 fans worldwide go to hear the music of Gary Floater on this tribute record?
GaryFloater.com.
Gary, GaryFloater, just like it sounds.
Floater Rising.
GaryFloater.com. And please be sure and go to search Gary Floater on YouTube. There's a, is that kind of
documentary.
a three-part documentary? Illustrated documentary with some interviews of the people who knew him, people talking about him, and some illustrations there. Because there really is, like, he's such a mysterious guy. There's not apparently a lot of footage or photographs of him. So this is sort of an artistic rendering of maybe what he's doing now or looks like.
He never shows up where he's supposed to be, so people have to draw him.
They have to draw him. He just exists in a sort of a two-dimensional form online, really.
Exactly. But a hell of a songwriter.
So go to YouTube and search Gary Floater, and then go to GaryFloater.com and download some songs. Or order the record. They order the record
iTunes
office
too. You can get them on that.
Have there been some odd orders for that? You had anybody in Europe order a Gary Floater record or anything
he's
like that?
I think he cut quite a swath across Europe back in the good old days, back in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
He was deported from Amsterdam. Which
was he really?
The first American deported from
is that
Amsterdam.
Right?
But he's still got some people that know his name.
Is that
there,
right?
So
yeah.
Cool.
Oh, man. Well, I bet he made
High
a,
Times.
I bet he
the
later,
song High Times
yeah.
it was actually set in Amsterdam. It was when he woke up in a bathtub, fully dressed, soaking wet.
Oh no!
Yeah,
and just said, "Now so, I got to write a song."
It was Heineken Mornings and his
now one of the documentaries. It says that he keeps a he demands that there be an inkwell and a quill pen everywhere backstage in case he gets inspired to write.
In case he never knows when he's gonna shit a new turd, and
that's what he said. Yeah. And there it lives.
There it is,
Gary Floater. Check it out, GaryFloater.com. Our guest has been Owen Temple here. Gosh, traveling Europe, putting out records, talking about putting back records in the 90s.
And it all started when I saw that record, Phil World,
really? That
in
just
the
start,
jukebox.
You just saw that and said, I can, too.
I do have to give you some credit. I have to say, hey.
Inspiring. That,
if he can make a record, maybe I can.
Maybe you can. And look at this. And now he's helping other people make records. Gary Floater, palling around with Adam Carroll, all over. You're OwenTemple.com, is that right?
Yep.
OwenTemple.com. Catch up with Owen. See what he's going. See what he's got going on. What he's up to. Always out playing. You get out all over the country, don't you? Play you and Carol and the guys.
I'm like you, man.
Europe, just southeast, banging around.
Knock it around. There's other people out there that care.
Uh-huh.
I'll keep driving around.
That's right, man. Well, thanks so much for coming in today to Trinidad World Recording Studios. Hope you enjoyed the coffee.
Nice digs here.
Hey, you bet, man. Thank you very much. The coffee's been hot.
Mm-hmm.
I am Phil Pritchett. This is the P2 Podcast. Thanks for listening, everyone. Email me, phil@philpritchett.com, or call me at 817-733-5256. Book us for a party. Come record here at the studio. And as always, go to p2tunes.com, download the records for $4. Or buy the Phil Pritchett catalog card and just download all 12 of our albums for $20. Amazing.
Get it,
amazing.
People.
That's right. Or you can just go to iTunes and download Phil Pritchett songs, Gary Floater songs, Owen Temple songs, Adam Carroll songs, whatever, of course. We're all out there. Well, join us next week for another edition of the P2 Podcast. But for this week, the coffee is gone. The day is growing late, and we will go off into that good night, and we will see you next week here on the podcast. Take care.
From the top of the Empire State Building to the bottom of a Mexican whore, I've seen the high and low places most men ain't been before. Now, to see me crawling, you'd think it's a new low. Wait and see how much distance I have got to go. I've got a whole lot further to fall. I'm crashing through your rock bottom and all. Look out below, you devil. Old Gary's coming to call. Got a whole lot further to fall. From the top of the Pyrenees Mountains to the bottom of a Dutch canal, you might think I've done all the falling that the good Lord would allow. If you see a hole in your basement floor, that's just Gary passing through. Sinking like a stone is what I was born to do. I've got a whole lot further to fall. Crashing through your rock bottom and all. Oh, come on now, look out, devil. Old Gary is coming to call. I got a whole lot further to fall. Yeah, I got a whole lot further. I got a whole lot.